Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot for you. First, on the NBA side, we've got some games in the belt, fun doubleheaders, fun overtime games. We talk about early observations through the first two or three days of the season. And then on the W side, we got some coaching jobs being filled. We're going to give our early thoughts on the hires. We hope you enjoy the episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday. How are you?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, basketball's fun, and it's time to talk about basketball, and hopefully you want to hear us talk about basketball. And so let's hoop it up, man.
Let's hoop it up indeed. So much basketball has happened. Every team has played at least once. I think the Warriors and the Thunder are the two teams that have played twice at the time of the recording on this Friday morning. But we'll start with the doubleheader from last night, Steve, because the word of the day was overtime. We got overtime in Golden State, Denver. We got two overtimes in OKC, Indy. But let's start with the late slate, the late game. Steph Curry with 42, Aaron Gordon with 50. Matching the jersey number. If he wasn't going to get it in the dunk contest, he got it on the court in a game that mattered. A 137-131 victory for the Warriors. And Steve, I'll go open-ended to kick this off. What stood out to you about this game?
Everything stood out to me, Nikias, because it was a great basketball game between two great basketball teams. I think for me, it's just the back and forth of it all. I think if you start with Golden State, you get a sense that this is a different type of feel to a degree, that they have a little bit more versatility. They have a little bit more belief in what they can do defensively. Offensively, we know they're going to get to their movement. We know they're going to keep pressure on you, but they just kind of flow in a different way. And Stephen Curry being able to just kind of get to the spots and get to the shots that he wants to still at this time in his career, it's really hard to deal with. And so, one, I enjoyed that they went ahead and took the Band-Aid off, and we saw Steph Curry and Jonathan Kuminga and Jimmy Butler and Draymond Green and Al Horford. I wonder who thought that was a good idea. But you kind of saw them get to that. And Steph, in those late-game moments, especially to me, where he was able to set up and get to his spots for those threes. Like, the range of them were insane. But the fact that he was able to say, okay, I know you're going to try and play it here. I'm going to take one dribble left, drive back to my right, and then immediately pull up. Being able to run, like, an in-the-game side out of bounds where Steph Curry's just in the backcourt with space and gets to choose which direction he wants to go to is pretty insane. Having Draymond Green and Al Horford to be able to defend Nikola Jokic is a pretty nice luxury for the Golden State Warriors. It's a possession that is still stuck in my brain where Al's guarding Jokic. They flow into a dribble handoff. Now Draymond switches onto Jokic. And Jokic is like, cool, I'll drive. He's met by Al Horford help. And I'm like, yeah, that's going to be fun in the playoffs. So really intrigued by the Warriors, but a great effort from Denver as well.
I like that. I think sticking with the Warriors quickly, it's a quiet question I was going to ask you was how you felt about how Golden State has started these games. I think naturally we were going to see a good bit of Draymond Green and Al Horford together, but it has been two straight games where it's like, yeah, we're going to start with Draymond at the five. Draymond, you're going to get the Jokic assignment early. And on the other end, we don't see the cross matching from Denver, at least to start the game, where you'd have Jokic on like Jonathan Kuminga or something like that. We did see that sprinkled in more as the game went on, but Jokic, you have to deal with Draymond at the five immediately, and thus you have to deal with the Steph Curry Draymond two-man game immediately. So I guess more so from the Warriors side, are you surprised that they're starting with Dre at the five in an effort to kind of manage the Al Horford minutes? Because I thought they would have gone double big in some capacity to then flow into Dre and Horford together.
Well, I think it's preservation. I think it's Jonathan Kuminga belief as well, and I think Al Horford's not playing two games in a back-to-back this season. So in theory, we might as well start Draymond, start Jonathan Kuminga, because that's what's going to happen. And they're on back-to-back now. So, Al's not going to be starting, so we might as well get that group flowing. We know what we get when Al's in there. If Al's out, we know who's going to sub in, take his minutes. So it's just kind of an absorption thing to me to manage the season, which I think is going to be important for the Warriors. And that's one thing that stood out as well. It's like, okay, what combinations can they hit? What combinations do they have to hit during certain points to be able to get to the good that we know exists?
Makes sense. I think it popped for me because, as we talked about on the Pacific preview, on the last episode. It's like, I know they're going to try to maintenance Al Horford of it all to make sure he's good to go. But like, there is also, I think, a level of preservation that Draymond's going to need too, because you want him at peak form. And so him having to deal with a bunch of fives, it's like, hey, just what is going to be the diet of that? I don't doubt how good he is at it, but just what is that diet going to be? So like, it'll treat me that this is how they started, but the logic certainly holds on that front. I guess while we're on the Golden State portion, we can go ahead and have the Jonathan Kuminga conversation if you'd like, Steve.
Are you ready? Are you ready to jump on in? Are you ready to jump to the Jonathan Kuminga? Is a good fit side? Are you ready?
No, not yet. But what I will say is that I have been impressed. I was impressed with the Jonathan Kuminga game last night. I was impressed with him in the opener against the Lakers as well. He's taken on tough defensive assignments. We talk about early starts. Here he is. Jamal Murray receives an inbound. He gets to take maybe two dribbles, and there's Jonathan Kuminga in front of him. It's like, okay, they are really tossing him to the wolves. You have to prove that you are willing to defend and are able to defend. He's been up to the challenge through the first two games. Luka had a lot of buckets in that first game, but he made Luka work for those. And so that's all you can do against star-level talents. But the defensive effort has certainly been there for Jonathan Kuminga. Offensively, I haven't felt many of the catch-and-hold sequences that have kind of bothered me in the early Kuminga years. And so, like, he's moving the ball. He's cutting when asked to. He's screening when asked to. Like, he can duck in against smaller defenders and get baskets that way. I've really appreciated the approach from Jonathan Kuminga through the first two games. So, like, to your question, am I ready to just fully believe this is just who Kuminga is? Not yet. I want to see a larger sample, because part of my frustration with Kuminga has been, I've seen you do this. Please continue to do it. It just kind of waxes and wanes. And like, I think there is some understandable frustration from Kuminga's side throughout all this. Like, okay, what is the belief level in me? Contract stuff, yada, yada, yada. I am just a young, talented player that wants opportunity, so I get it. But it's more so consistency for me. And so if this is who Kuminga is going to be, we're going to have a podcast episode a few weeks out where I'm like, yeah, I'm just in. He has shown that he is just going to keep doing this. Yes. Two games isn't enough for me to change my tune yet. I want to see him keep doing it.
See, this is where my coach brain kicks in. It's the little things. There's never a doubt that Jonathan Kuminga was a talented basketball player. There's never a doubt that Jonathan Kuminga could help the Golden State Warriors. Was he going to do the little things every single night? You mentioned the cutting. I'm talking about defense as well. The play that he had late in that game where they are in pick and roll, Steph Curry switches and then immediately goes to the corner because I'm not guarding Nikola Jokic. And Jonathan Kuminga is right there on the catch. That counts. That's impactful.
Yeah.
Those are winning plays. That makes Steve Kerr warm in the chest when he sees that. That's what you want to see. Even the effort to go ahead and at the end of the game on that last play to get in there and try and get a hand on the ball. Like that's what he has to do every single night. So if I know now, I can bake in the defense. I can trust you're going to do the right things. I know you're going to move the ball. I already know you're good. That's kind of the blend. And this is why early season success is really important for teams. You get belief. You get buy-in. You have some wins to go with it. You keep moving forward. And so that's where I'm like, I'm high on what I've seen because I'm seeing more of those little things that will keep you on the floor. And he's getting more of those moments and opportunities to stay on the floor.
Yeah, I think that is more than fair. So again, for me, it's more cautious optimism for me on the Kuminga front. But to your point, like he is doing it and he deserves to be praised for doing it. I just want to see him keep doing it. It's just the general point for me. actually, on the Denver side, mentioned at the top, Aaron Gordon with 50 points in this basketball game. Shot the leather off the ball. Made his first 8 threes, I believe, before he finally missed one. Incredible shooting performance, which builds on the great shooting year that he had last year. And, you know, I don't think he is a 90% three-point shooter this year. But if Aaron Gordon is just a guy that can knock down shots and you can't afford to put centers on him, you can't afford to just gap him off the ball, that does change some things for the Denver offense and how teams try to deal with the Denver offense. And I think more than anything, as I was trying to figure out like just major things for Denver, it was the Gordon points and the threes, but the Gordon involvement period just seemed a lot higher. Here he is running, I think, 7 or 8 pick and rolls in this game. You still have the off-ball usage. Again, not down a bunch of threes. But if this is going to be one of the tweaks that we see under the first full season of David Adelman, we want to make sure Aaron Gordon is just even more involved in our half-court flow take some pressure off of Jamal Murray to create a whole bunch of stuff, take some pressure off of Jokic to create a whole bunch of stuff. If we are going to get more volume out of the Swiss Army knife that is Aaron Gordon, I'm intrigued by that.
I mean, the box scores, the threes were loud, the drives were there. I mm-hmm. think back, and we've seen with this Denver team, with Nikola Jokic, with Jamal Murray, with Aaron Gordon, them being able to just put so much pressure on you in the fourth quarter by using those three in action together. I did not know that would mean we're going to run elbow action. This screen from Jamal Murray for Aaron Gordon is now actually a flare for a three, and that's a wide open look that went. Like, that's adding another layer to something that was already tough to guard. And so I think his improvement's going to get better. I think overall you saw Jamal Murray. Again, when you see him driving, you see him getting downhill, that's a different player. And when he's playing at a high level, we know where he takes Denver. I'm very intrigued to see what they did because Denver mixed some different things in defensively. Jokic, occasionally you switch. Jokic, occasionally you be at the level. Let's go zone and try and just mix things up. Mm-hmm. So I like the fact that they're attempting different things on defense. It's going to take time. Like, this is game one. So you really just got to track and see what the attempts are, what works, what doesn't work, and see what they move on. I like the rotation and the depth from the perspective that anyone could play with Jokic, right? So when you make your first subs, you trust whoever's out there to be able to play off Jokic. But now you get to these second unit lineups. And Jonas Valanciunas is very important, very key for them. Like, he just can do a lot of things. I don't want to use the word handoff hub today, but we know that you can play through him. I think when you have quality players like Bruce Brown, like Tim Hardaway Jr. that can mix and match with both lineups, or you can have Jamal Murray and Aaron Gordon with JV in the bench lineup, it gives Denver just a lot of lineup versatility that helps them going forward. And so I like kind of that aspect of it for them.
Oh, I'm right there with you. Just having that kind of, I guess, scheme continuity just keeps a consistent level of pressure on opposing teams. Like, okay, cool. We're Jokic just taking a break. We don't have to deal with all these passes and all these high post stuff. Oh no, it's just JV. He will also hit you in the chest. And then here's the movement shooting of Tim Hardaway Jr. Quality game for him off the bench last night. To your point, it just makes Denver that much more difficult to deal with. I guess a quick question I will toss your way in regards to Jokic, who just, I don't know if you can have quiet triple doubles, but I guess he did have a quiet triple double in this game. 13 threes for him in this one. It felt like he became more jumper heavy as the game went on, at least in my viewing. If this is a year that Jokic just takes more threes in general, like, I don't think I mind that. 13 certainly felt like a lot, considering some of the size advantages he had at different points of this game. Did the three-point volume pop at all for you, for Jokic, or was that just a me thing?
This is absolutely a Nekias Duncan thing. This is this has a Nekias Earl Grey Duncan stamp right on it.
Not an Earl Grey stamp. That's crazy. But no, it was just like just one off of it. I think his career high was 14. Set that against Charlotte last year. We had like 29 and 17 or something ridiculous in that game. But I was like, okay, I'm intrigued because I think we both believe Jokic is the best player in the league. And at least in the half court, he's the most difficult guy to deal with in the league. And so if that is going to be an even bigger part of his arsenal, I will have just the back of the head, the back of the mind question of, okay, what exactly is this blend going to be for him? Because we know he can get to that floater whenever he wants to, the touch shot, especially when him and Jamal Murray are in two-man game together. We know when he is just purely on the block, there isn't much you can do. You send help from anywhere, he sees it before you think about doing it. And so will you find the right blend of the perimeter usage for him? I trust that he will, but like, it did kind of stand out to me like a slight thing. Oh, the approach does feel a little different in this one.
I have a question for you.
What's up?
How'd you feel about Cam Johnson and Christian Brown in this basketball game?
I think you would want both of them to perform better, but like, honestly, process wise, I didn't really mind it. Like, I think Cam Johnson had opportunities to drive. He certainly had spot up opportunities. He just missed shots. I would be more concerned if this was a heavy turn down game from him to where he is messing. He is driving when he probably had a shot, or he is shooting when he probably had a drive. Like, I didn't really feel that in this game, and kind of a similar thing for Christian Brown, more so tracking the defense than anything, because I know he can play off of Jokic. Like, there were some finishes at the rim, and I talked about on the preview, hey, the half court finishing feels better for him early on, and he certainly took a leap last year. Some bunnies that you would like to see go down for him, but this is more, I think they will make these, than any kind of concern area. Was there anything that stood out to you that kind of raised the brow?
No. I mean, I think the fit for Cam Johnson is there. It's just going to be, okay, aggression, which kind do you have at times? So I liked in the preseason kind of the version of playmaking that he can have where he gets a handoff, pick and roll. I can take one dribble, I can hold the defense, I can get to the big. Don't make that the automatic.
Yeah.
And then for Christian Brown, we've seen what he can do. So, I mean, tough night, but we know he can produce for this team. And again, I think I like the fact they have the depth. So, I mean, if they have an off night, we can still get certain things from different people. So just figured I'd get your opinion on that.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. trying to think, is there anybody? Jimmy Butler seems more spry. Seems like a big thing. It would appear that he is healthier because towards the end of the playoff run last year, he just was not. And so it is cool to see, at least through the first two games for him. Again, the Warriors, one of the two teams that have already played two. Nice to see him driving. Nice to see him getting to the line a bunch. And then kill shot above the break three to help cap things for Golden State last night. So if this is going to be the Jimmy Butler that we get, he is just healthier and happier, and he is more willing to pull the trigger. Like, that was a question that I sprinkled out on the preview. If he's just going to be, I'll put my head down, especially in these non-step minutes, I'm in. Or even more in on Golden State, if this is the Jimmy Butler that we're going to get. So I wanted to make sure I said his name on the pod at the very least. But I was impressed by the Jimmy performance.
Can I tell you my favorite Jimmy Butler play?
You sure can.
This is the second quarter. I think Aaron Gordon had just hit another three. Shocker. But Steph Curry's racing up the court, and there's two on him, and Jimmy Butler's running the court. He just bear hugs, I think it was Cam Johnson, to be like, you can't help. And got away with it. And I was like, yeah, that's a smart play. Like, Jimmy Butler doing high IQ things in Golden State is funny. Because it's like, yeah, I can do all this stuff, but also, look at the basketball brain. You know, like, that's good stuff there. So, I mean, it was good. I liked, for Denver, the back and forth nature of it was fun. You know, for Denver to be able to establish, I mean, Golden State jumps on them. Denver comes back, takes a big lead in the second quarter. Golden State doesn't let go of the rope. They come back. And now we're just kind of going at it in the middle of the ring. I enjoyed that aspect. I think that's kind of just going to be the Western Conference in general. Like, who has it on this night? And how can we poke at each other? And what do we do next time we see each other?
If I can briefly annoy you, Steve, that game had a playoff feel to it between the Warriors and the old Nuggets. Do we like that?
So we're going playoff feel. Game one, huh? So we're doing.
And this is why I said it, because I knew you wouldn't accept it. Okay, but we're going to take a quick break. When we return, we will talk about this awesome Thunder Pacers game. We'll be right back. All right, we are back to get into the first leg of the doubleheader from last night. We had the Thunder and the Pacers, a finals rematch, a 141-135 double overtime thriller, Steve. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander with 55 points in this basketball game. We've already had 7 40-plus point performances this year, and we're like 3 days into the season, so that's kind of nuts. But similar open-ended question for you, Steve. What stood out to you in this one? What popped for you? What are you curious about after that game?
It appears the Thunder just can't avoid double OT at the current moment. My goodness. I think number one, obviously, the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of it all stood out to me. I mean, if you look at that box score and you go and try and circle 26 free throws, fine, whatever. You're missing out on the joy and the excitement of the game because you're missing out on what Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is doing. He gets to his spot whenever he wants. And he's toggling through matchups that we've seen in these first two games to where when I get this isolation, if I get you off balance, I win. And now it's either it's up to me if I want to get to this pull up, this step back, or keep driving. They try and put size and length on him, shifty. They try and put speed on him to pressure, size. So we're just kind of watching this back and forth. I mean, I thought it was a funny bit. Everyone was yelling about the free throws. Shai said, hey, Andrew Nembhard, I'm about to get two fouls on you extremely quickly. Let's have a conversation about what you did to me in the finals. I don't really want to do that. So I thought Shai was incredible. And it's just, man, when he gets to his spot, when he rises, it's pretty tough. I do want to salute the Indiana Pacers. And I do believe the Indiana Pacers deserve a high level of respect because we felt that the Pacers would still be the Pacers. Might look a little different, but they're still going to be the Pacers. They competed. They fought like heck defensively. Now, I think they have to because they don't have the same margin for error, but they competed on that end of the floor at a high degree. Pascal Siakam, very good at basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about it in the preseason. Every question that you had about the Pacers, Benedict Bathurst was somewhere raising his hand saying, I'm prepared to do this. Uh-huh. Me, I'll do it. And boy, he did. Obi Toppin is their best big. Yes, I said it. Jairus Walker, salute, young man. The drives get to a spot, getting a shot. So Indiana, it's going to be a grind for them. They got to figure out what their fourth quarter offense is going to be consistently, but they're going to compete. They're going to show up, mm-hmm. and they're going to cause heck.
The Obi shout is interesting to me. The Pacers cycling through bigs in that basketball game was just a very loud, oh, yeah, this is going to kind of be a thing. Isaiah Jackson, we go again in game two. It's going to be fine. It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. J. Huff, we see you. We will see what happens in game two. Obi Toppin, neat. I will say, to your matchup hunting portion of Shay, when he saw Obi Toppin, hey, well, I'm sorry, who's he guarding? Hey, you come here, come set a screen for me. Let's see what we can do about this. We're going to get two on the ball and I'll get off of it. Or they're going to switch this and now it's time to boogie. It was a similar thing at the end of the Houston game. It was like, hey, where is Jabari Smith Jr.? Like, you're not a bad defender, but like, you can't flip the hips like that. You come dance with me, big fella. So it's going to be interesting to track the front court of the Indiana Pacers for sure. The great Caitlin Cooper, if you're not following her, you should be already. She was just tracking the big man rotations and who's playing together when pretty much that entire game. It's like, yeah, this is a lot of toggling that Rick Carlisle is doing right now. Understandably so, trying to find some answers on that front. But to Pascal Siakam, very quickly, and we can shift back to the Thunder. 32-15 for Pascal. And you got the full blend of the Pascal Siakam experience. I will take you into the mid post and have fun. I will get all the way to the basket and have fun. The fun for me, Steve, not just threes for Pascal Siakam. I'm taking these off the bounce. I can self-create. I'm more comfortable taking these shots. I will just be pure three-level self-creating score if I have to be for this team. And because of the injuries and because of some of the uncertainty of who his front court partner is going to be, they probably will need for him to be that self-creating option on all three levels. But I think he's up for the challenge. Like, I don't think it's going to be 32-15 every night with this level of efficiency. But just from a talent perspective, he can absolutely score whenever and however you need for him to. And I think if he is able to take on more ownership, it should take pressure off of everyone else. Because I think even before, like, the Nembhard foul trouble and the eventual injury, he got tied up defending Shea. I was trying to track like what the coverages for Nembhard would be. How many unders would he see? How many switches would he see? Would he ever get two on the ball against OKC? We certainly just did not, really just didn't see that. And the opener is like, okay, what is going to be the Nembhard portion? Because naturally, alongside Tyrese Haliburton, he was kind of the relief valve. Oh, they're trying to face guard him behind half court. Give it to me. I'll initiate the offense. And if I have a matchup, I can boogie in the mid range, whatever. Now you just kind of have to run the offense sometimes. And that's a little bit of a different responsibility. It's a little bit of a different task. So, like, if Pascal is able to take more pressure off, if they're going to sprinkle in more guard screens for Pascal to hunt matchups or whatever, that should make life easier for the guards. You ask Benedict Mathurin, he probably just doesn't think he needs that. He also had a 30 ball in this one and did not mind getting downhill on top of that. But I'm curious about what this hierarchy is going to look like. I'm curious about what this front court for Indiana is going to be. But I'm with you. They do deserve a salute. They played their tails off in this one.
I think the most interesting thing for the Pacers was 46 made field goals, 21 assists. And I think that's where mm-hmm. they're going to have to find and figure out different ways to create advantages, keep them. Obviously, if they shoot better from three, it'll look better. It'll feel better. But I think the pace and tempo is going to be there, but the flow is going to be a little bit different. So if you're not able to get drill penetration, if you're not able to get two on the ball, teams are going under the handoffs. You know, being physical, if you're going off staggers, it's going to kind of grind you in a different way, but they're going to keep moving the ball. So, I mean, I have a higher mm-hmm. confidence level in what Indiana does as a base offensively. It's just, can they find the consistency in their counters as the season goes on? That's something Rick Carlisle's done during the course of his career and while in Indiana. So it's more of a work in progress. I think the hierarchy, it's just got to be aggression. Like, I think if you're Ben Shepherd, if you're Jairus Walker, everyone's got to look to try and get downhill. Everyone's got to look to try and cause chaos. You got to get some cuts in there. Like, it's just going to be a group effort. And then if the group effort gets you into the fourth quarter, now that's where I'm like, what do we got? Where are we going? But none of that, none of that matters. The defense is not at a high level, and thankfully for them, it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I would not look at the final score and be like, well, no, they didn't. Like, no. That pressure, that physicality, OKC's half-court offense. I won't say it was in a box, but OKC had to work to get these shots. Shea had to go to two and three pivots sometimes to draw some of these fouls that he was able to get. Like, the Pacers did their job in making life difficult for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Like, there's a reason this game went to overtime. Would not let some of the late shot making confuse you on that portion if you didn't watch that full game. To the Thunder, Steve. We started with Shea, and rightfully so. A lot of Aaron Wiggins in this one. A lot of A.J. Mitchell in this one. Naturally, wing Jalen Williams, still recovering. Has not played for OKC yet. But how have you felt about the OKC depth through the first two games of this season?
Fine. It's OKC. I mean, they are kind of...
what they do.
I mean, they're knocking on... They're getting close to knocking on the door of, hey, some of y'all need to come back. But it's they have the ability to be next man up pretty well. Now, I don't think they want to get this far into it. And it's going to be interesting having to navigate the depth issue with teams being like, hey, we kind of need to beat you. If we want to beat you. But that's an odd combo, but I'm not worried about the depth. I think that's kind of just what Coach Dadnall has built this thing on. Everyone knows their role. Everyone knows their responsibility. You come in, you fill in, and you do your job, and we continue on to the next night. So that's not really a concern for me. It's interesting to see how they build things out from night to night if certain guys are out. Because it felt like they just were like, Indiana, guess what? Pick and roll. We're running a lot of pick and roll. Hey, remember how Shea Gilgeous-Alexander would just get a screen near half court and then turn the corner? We're going to do that again. And we're just going to keep doing that. And you guys have fun with it. So that's where it's like, how much do I judge their half court offense when it was pretty clear they kind of shifted into that? Maybe because some guys were out, maybe because of the opponent. But overall, I'm not concerned about the depth. Doesn't move me. Unmoved. Seated. Still.
Seated and still. I like that. Like, it's, I guess for me, as someone that enjoys an AJ Mitchell, you know what I mean? Like, it's been cool to see him take more of the reins. He's kind of had to in light of, it was one thing, you know, you head into the Houston.
Kind of had to. That brother is willing. What you mean?
I'll be Jalen Williams. Like, well, we don't need to do that. We just need you to take advantage of some of these openings if you got. No, I got it. It's like, all right. Fair enough, Mr. Mitchell. But no, I have enjoyed AJ Mitchell through the first two games of this one. And what I was going to say is, it's one thing like heading into the Houston game. It's like, okay, cool. Well, you don't have Jalen Williams yet. We don't have Isaiah Joe right now. I'm not going to have Toppage for a while. I'm like, okay, cool. We still have most of the rotation. You then add on the Alex Caruso, I think, in concussion protocol right now. It's like, okay, well, there's another chunk out of the line of versatility and just the overall depth. We're getting like first quarter Brooks Barnheiser minutes, which, hey, man, game one, we need you to guard a little bit of Alperen Sengun. Game two, hey, can you deal with Benedict Mathurin sometime? Like, he's had to do a little bit of everything already. And so I'm curious to see how he holds up as the season goes on. But yeah, it's interesting watching them go deeper into this, to your earlier point. I think these reps are going to be helpful for the second unit. So when they do get healthier, naturally they won't be tasked with doing that. But if they got to get called up again, they have this early experience. Shea hitting the man, I'm tired at the end of that double overtime, understandably so. This has just been a lot on his plate through the first two games. But it is also impressive to me that the Thunder are still adding these wins to the tally while they're dealing with their own injury stuff. And if they stack these while they're not healthy, they should be able to stack them when they are. And so my overall OKC outlook is still incredibly high. But that part's been fun. The one thing I'll ask you, Steve, I started with the depth. What is the Chet Holmgren grade through two games?
You know, that's my question to you. Don't even try it. Sneak the question into me first, buddy. No.
I want your thoughts.
So here's the deal, right? Chet Holmgren had an amazing game against Houston. Really made an impact, put a stamp on this game. Didn't quite feel the impact in this one against Indiana. Half of that was because Pascal Siakam said, hey, not you, not right now. This is not happening. So I'm going to flip the question to you, because you are extremely high on the Chet Holmgren experience. You were very keen on if Chet Holmgren takes another leap, what's that do for Oklahoma City? So what's your grade, Nikias Duncan? What are you sending home on the report card? Is Chet Holmgren getting his phone taken away? What's going on, bud?
Chet Holmgren's phone is safe. We'll start there. I think he's good. I'd probably say probably a B. B plus. Because to your point, the Houston game was very good. And like the way that he went about scoring, it was less about the actual box score, but the comfort in the middle of the floor in particular. Like I can get to this mid-range. I can flash to the mid-range and just get a quick shot. Or if I do need to create something, quick bump, turn around, I'm extending over you, that kind of thing. In addition to the three-point shooting, he can sprinkle in whatever. We get to this Indy game. It felt like a little bit of last postseason to where he missed his first couple and then he gets a kick and there's a hesitation because he doesn't really want to take it. And I'm just like, you can't fall in that boat once again, Chet Holmgren. Like, it is easy to wave away. He went 1 of 8 from three. These were open shots. He took them in rhythm. Some basketball is just that sometimes. You do the right things and the shots just don't fall. I don't want to have the reminders of like the Chet Holmgren turndowns from the perimeter. And like he did not have the same mid-range success as he did in the Houston game. But like I was still, you know, not impressed is probably too strong, but like I'm glad that he was still taking those in rhythm at the very least. Like he didn't shy away from trying to create inside the arc. And so, again, certainly this game was not as good as the first one. Like I did kind of chuckle and then I kind of flowed into confusion towards the end of the game where the Pacers just kept trying to put Chet in action. I'm just like, I understand why you want him on the perimeter, but he is still good. And like, these are just stops more often than not. Y'all should probably try to pick at somebody else. And so I'm glad he held up in that regard. But to answer your question, probably B plus. I think it's probably where I have it right now.
Okay. Now, I think the only thing that it's interesting to me to a degree is do teams just decide we're just going to put Chet in a box to a degree. You are going to become switch. You are going to become, we're fine with this. Beat us if you can. Like how many Western Conference teams, the good ones, a lot of good ones, do you feel like could just live with that based on their lineups?
I mean, I'd wager within that context, probably a good bit. We'll just switch these.
And so now what does that look like? And I mean, it's almost every big goes through that journey to a degree where it's like, cool, I'm glad you can do a bunch of stuff. We're just switching. Now, what are you going to do? So it'll be interesting to see how he navigates that during the season.
Yeah. And that's where, again, like at least inside the arc, him maintaining that aggression is a positive sign to me. Not the same shot making game in game two compared to game one, but keeping that mindset, I think is going to be important for him. Especially if he is going to see a higher degree of switches, like put your shoulder into people. He doesn't shy away from contact at the very least. Just keeping an eye on the three-pointers, buddy. We know you can shoot. Don't let the bad shooting game like deter you and add a hitch to the half court. That's all I'm saying. But I think that pretty much puts a ball on this, Steve. Quick shout out to AJ Mitchell and Aaron Wiggins once again, saving basketball in that overtime. But shout out to the Thunder. Shout out to the Pacers. And on that note, I got Steve once again. We're going to take a quick break while Steve recovers. And when we return, we bounce around the league. We've talked a lot about these national games. We bounce around for what else we've seen so far through the opening games of the season. We'll be right back.
Saving basketball.
And we are back, and Steve, it's time to bounce around the league. We talked about the national slate a little bit. I'm sure we still have other big names to talk about throughout this segment, but League Pass is fully open at this point. Want to dig into like what you've been watching so far, who stood out to you. You know, we only have a game or two in the book, so obviously no major takeaways, but let's talk about what popped for you. What's caught your eye so far this year, Steve?
It does not matter that this happened days ago. It doesn't matter that everyone's talked about it. What the hell did Victor Wembanyama do? What would you like me to do with that? Like, we talked about all the promise and, ooh, he's hitting first. And, ooh, what was that? Yeah. Hezzy drive, block shot, step back three, and one. I'm very tall. What?
the face up into the drive, into the reverse dunk and
one. Nah, man. Look, man. That guy's must-see TV. I'll put it there. Anthony Edwards, buddy, that man is on a mission. And let me tell you one thing. 28 field goal attempts against Portland. One assist. Enough of that. It's time for me to get buckets and get buckets regularly, and I'm going to do this over and over again. And so I think the thing for me with Anthony Edwards, one, I like the post-ups. I like the vision that he has. He's looking at the low man. He feels more comfortable getting to his shot out of it. So if you're going to double, it doesn't matter to me. I'm going to get to my shot. But the Portland Trailblazers, feisty defensive team, great defensive personnel, Drew Holiday, Tumani Kamara, Matisse Thybulle, the list goes on and on. Anthony Edwards is just cycling through them.
Yeah.
It's not how that's supposed to work. And I think what you've seen is, one, proved handle. And so a little bit of quicker decisions. And so he's still lulling you, but it's a quicker lull. And so he gets you off balance. That handle's where he wants it. And then the footwork is what people got to start to appreciate, as far as I can get to whatever spot I want to get to, step back, pull up, whatever, and I'm in rhythm. And that's a dangerous combination for the league. So, I mean, I wanted to give a salute to Anthony Edwards, who, by the way, before I throw it to you quickly, was my pick for Clutch Player of the Year. And, Nikias, how many shots has Anthony Edwards missed in the fourth quarter so far this season?
I'm going to wager zero.
Not a one. Go ahead, Big Dog.
Oh, I just had a question for you while you were on Anthony Edwards and the Wolves, because one of the things that came out before the season was that they were shifting their starting lineup. They were going to go with Dante DiVincenzo starting alongside Anthony Edwards. And so Chris Finch talked a little bit after the game, like, because I don't think we saw Rob Dillingham in this game. And it's like, yeah, we're going to do a bunch of different things. Everyone just has to stay ready. Like, even if we're starting this way, doesn't mean that's how it's always going to be, et cetera. Just how do you feel about the lineup change, and how do you feel about Minnesota's depth moving forward?
Shout out Mike Conley. I think the thing for me with Minnesota, and it's just early season rhythm. Every fan of a team, every player on a roster has to recognize these first 2-3 weeks even, experimentation is going to happen. So all the time that you complain about coaches and why didn't you try these lineups, they're doing it now. So pay attention now and see what the attempts are now. Because you can win your way into the rotation, you can play your way into the rotation, and you cannot understand that this was your chance and play your way out because someone else understood the assignment. So Bones Highland, you got to show the minutes when you get it and you produce, because it may be Rob Dillingham's turn next time. It may be an uptick from Mike Conley, because here's the thing. We know what we're going to get from Mike Conley. So if we get to a point where neither of you are doing what you're supposed to do, well, Mike, hope you're ready to hoop.
Big dog, wily veteran.
That's kind of how it goes. And like, if you're a younger talent, a younger player, this is where you have to show a level of consistency to where when a coach looks down that bench, I know I'm getting this and we need what he does. On top of, instead of just being a situational scenario type player where we need offense, no one's scoring, you are a shooter, come in. You missed, come out. You don't want to be in that zone.
Yeah. Okay. Just want to see where you were on that before you moved off of Minnesota. Anything else pop for you, good sir?
Well, I mean, sticking on Minnesota real quick, Jaden McDaniels, assertive, aggressive,
getting
downhill. And so him initiating action is one thing. Him attacking closeouts is another. Him getting to pull-ups is another thing. And I'm intrigued to see if that is going to grow. So salute to him. Ja Morant, with a quick reminder of what he does. And let me tell you, that brother turned his ankle in the fourth quarter and ran off spite to end that game. An unbelievable amount of spite. That man wants to beat the Pelicans whenever he sees them. But I think the one thing that stood out to me with Ja was he had control and he was really trying to get to like these mid-range or short-range pull-ups, step-backs, floaters. And if he can get to that curveball, just mix it in just enough, because he's going to more than not get drop defense. But even in transition, if Ja's coming full speed or even close to full speed, you're probably backing up trying to protect the rim. He stops and pops. That's less whisper in the wind type Jeff Hardy moves from Ja Morant. And so he could just get to his spot and shot. If you're in drop, I can just pull up real quick and now I can go to my fastball. So I'm intrigued to see how that goes. Now, obviously, hopefully the ankle's fine. Hopefully he's able to play. But if Ja's able to unlock that and Memphis gets healthy, that's where I think a lot of the fun happens. So I wanted to give them a shout. Do you have any Memphis thoughts?
Not yet. That's a game I haven't finished in full yet. We got to catch the fourth quarter of that
Western
one.
Western Conference bias.
No.
Okay.
But fault. No, I got to watch the fourth quarter of that. We got to see a lot of that with you, actually, when we were having the watch party. But yeah, Ja's incredible. Also, Ja just laughing at insert player here. We're not going to do that on this podcast. But yeah, Ja's a very funny basketball player on top of being very talented. And so, like, I think that attitude is going to be an enjoyable watch for me this season. But shout out to him. Shout out to Zion. Just the South Carolina guys, but no, I'm with you. I hope Ja's good.
Side note, if you're a Pelicans fan, I'm intrigued by the Zion Williamson small lineups. So just keep that in the back pocket for you. Milwaukee Bucks, you shouldn't watch the Bucks play the Washington Wizards as many times as I did over the last 2 days. But what stuck with me was just the consistency offensively and mm-hmm. what they're doing around Giannis Antetokounmpo. And how locked in they are as a team together into the concepts. Like, we've seen Giannis be involved in different ways. At the elbow, pushing, as a screener. We've seen all that. We've understood that they're going to have more lineups, more pace, keeping more involved. That's all good. When you get to the Bucks second unit lineup, and they're also moving the ball and getting to drive and kick, that's where it's like, okay, this is something deeper than just we're building this around Giannis. We've kind of fundamentally changed what we're doing offensively, which is not surprising considering some of the coaches they have on the Bucks staff. But I think the addition of Miles Turner gives them a pop because of his random cutting that he does that just fits. Now, there are times where I do believe Giannis Antetokounmpo has told him, hey, you don't have to cut at this moment. But when he's running in transition, he dives to the other side and it creates space. Like, that's just good stuff. When he cuts from the corner, that's just good stuff. It opens things up for him. And there's just more certainty from them outside of the first action. Flowing from side to side. Miles Turner's short roll decision making. Being able to play, you know, it's not new, but we do Miles Turner screen on one side. We advance to the other side. Oh, that's Giannis screening now. So we've got some movement. It's not like you can just help off Miles automatically from the corner. Just good flow. And so I want to see how that grows for Milwaukee. It's got me intrigued, especially in the Eastern Conference, which is very fun. Land of opportunity. Don't sleep on the East. So there. Did you have any Bucks thoughts?
Not yet. Also, a game I have to get to. Did see the 37-14, I believe, from Giannis, so I'm ready to lock in. Just roaming the thoughts of some of my mutuals that did get to watch that game. Apparently, Keyshawn George had himself a day, so I'm excited to see what that looks like. But, hey, Giannis was my preseason MVP pick, so excited to dig into the film of that one, see what that looks like. I certainly trust your eyes and your judgment. But, yeah, that's where I'm at with the Bucks right now. I want to little dig into the film myself, see if anything else pops for me.
I just want to quickly highlight the Knicks. Because I do think the funniest possible thing was Mikal Bridges being able to drive and kick, and it swings to Jalen Brunson for their first bucket. And then he drives and kicks to get Cat a three. And I'm like, yep, it looks like Coach Mike Brown's thought process is working out pretty well for the Knicks. And they're going to have some offensive flow this season that's going to make it tough to deal with. So I want to give a quick salute to the Knicks offense. I would like to see the Cleveland Cavaliers be able to handle pick and roll in a better way, depending and based on how the playoffs ended. I need that to be something they check off the box and check off the box quickly. So I don't have to talk about it anymore because I didn't enjoy some of what I saw. So I just mentioned that very casually. And that should be it for me. What stood out to you, big dog?
That'll do it. Before we get there, I'm glad you ended with the Cavs because I had something I wanted to say about the Cleveland Cavaliers before we got into things. So last episode, we did some early award talk, and we talked about Defensive Player of the Year. And we talked Wimby, and I brought up Chet Holmgren, and I brought up Bam Adebayo. And in my haste to push the conversation forward, I did not bring up last year's Defensive Player of the Year winner in Evan Mobley. So I wanted to formally apologize to Evan Mobley, the Cleveland Cavaliers organization, the Cleveland Cavaliers fans, Mark Schindler, and anyone else associated with the state of Ohio for my gaffe. Big Evan Mobley fan. I literally had his name in my notes. Just went too fast in the conversation. So I wanted to sprinkle that in first.
Bro, you gonna apologize to me? You gonna apologize to me for saying he was an MVP candidate instead of Donovan Mitchell? You gonna apologize to Donovan Mitchell? What is this?
No, Donovan Mitchell is very good, and I do still believe that Evan Mobley was the most impactful player on the team last year. All right,
what are your basketball thoughts, man? Give me
okay, so first, a league-wide thing for me, and it's something that we talked about during our preview series, with more teams likely tapping the full-court pressure button, or at the very least just having higher pickup points if it isn't going to be full, like pure full-court pressure. So last year, Steve, there were five teams with an average pickup distance of 47 feet or more, so half-court extended. The Blazers, the Nets, the Grizzlies, the Raptors, and the Pacers, who ended up making the finals run last year, right? Through opening night, just the first two, 3 days of the season. So everyone's played once, some twice. There are 10 teams now with an average pickup distance of over 47 feet. You do have your usual suspects. Again, Portland, Brooklyn, Memphis, Toronto, Indiana in that top 10. Entering the fray, Steve, the Boston Celtics, who were 22nd last year in average pickup distance. A whole lot of Jaylen Brown just guarding Joel Embiid as he walks up the court, which I hope Joel Embiid's okay. He did not seem to be moving well in that opener. We'll see how that goes forward. The Cleveland Cavaliers, also in that mix. They were 20th last year. The Phoenix Suns, who had one heck of a comeback victory against the Sacramento Kings. They were 24th last year. The Washington Wizards, who were 9th last year, but still underneath that 47-foot threshold. And the Milwaukee Bucks, who were 11th. And so more teams are doing it. League average is about 3 feet higher than it was last year, though obviously this is a very early sample, but it's just going to be something that we're going to both track, I would imagine. You brought this up during preseason discussions. I'm infatuated by it. So I want to sprinkle that in first. It does seem like more teams are doing it.
Man, we're about to track it in the opposite directions. I'm about to watch these teams realize they can't do it.
We're going to be right back to five by the end of the year.
you see some teams realize very quickly, ooh, we ain't got it. Or insert team here gives it to a person who's not going to pressure. And now what you talking about? Continue.
Yeah, that's good. But I want to start there just to give a quick update there since we both talked about it. And that kind of flows into the games that I want to discuss or the teams I want to discuss. Oh, so starting with Toronto and Atlanta, right? Intrigued by the Raptors, high on the Hawks. It was a very funny bit early in that game where the Toronto Raptors, once again, trying to set up their full court pressure. And it is just immediate, hey, how about we pass the ball to Onyeka Okongwu or insert big here? Trae Young, who was being face guarded, is like, okay, cool. Somebody else has the ball. Quick shove. I am now running full speed with nobody in front of me. And now it is just an immediate fast break. And I was like, well, this is a very funny bit between these two teams. Also, on the other end, hoo boy, that Hawks transition defense to kick off the season. And I feel like I could say that about a lot of teams in game one of their install. Was not great for the Atlanta Hawks defensively. Did not love in the half court, didn't love their off-ball attentiveness. I feel like it was just Toronto Raptor handoff or pick and roll, person in corner lifts to wing, nobody tracks the person on the wing. Here's an open shot or an open driving opportunity. I'm just like, how many times are the Raptors going to do this before you recognize, hey, I might need to pay a little bit more attention to some of the relocations that they're doing? So kudos to the Raptors. But hey, Atlanta, we got to tighten some screws. What's up, Steve?
Well, I was going to ask you a question. Do you feel like the defense is going to hold the Hawks back, or do you feel like some of the half-court adventures offensively is going to hold the Hawks back?
I was more concerned with the defense than the offense, but I do think it is fair to point out some of the half-court adventures from Atlanta offensively. And like some of that was also just Toronto defended well, and they do just have a lot of length they can throw out there. It certainly felt like a lot of Jalen Johnson initiation in this one, which I am a fan of. The drives for him were fun. Just an ungodly amount of jump passes and late passes from him in this basketball game. Also, not the best debut. If we're talking about half-court creation, not the best debut for Nikhil Alexander-Walker. We'll just say hashtag that was a lot. But what? I trust that that's going to be better.
Well, this is kind of the flip side of a new face in a new place. I got a little bit more room in this in this apartment. I got a little bit more. I can get a bigger couch. I kick my feet up. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it was something. But kudos to the Raptors. Like, it was, the defense was fun. You know, full court pressure gaps aside, like the defense was pretty good in the half court. Offensively. Steve, I had a whole thing about, hey, Scotty Barnes, I need this process to be good for you, big dog. I didn't love the process from you in the preseason. Complete 180 in this opening game. I'm running hard. When we do have transition opportunities, I'm getting these either early cuts or I am sealing somebody. In the half court, when I am a screener, I'm still trying to slip everything. That I would like to see that tweak a little bit. But I am at least doing the quick little subtle shove. I'm getting some contact on some of these slips. So it's cool to see that. And just in general, when he had the ball, I am working to get into the paint in some capacity. Even if this is going to be a turnaround jumper, this is about to be a 6 or 7 foot turnaround instead of a 14 or 15 foot turnaround. Just a really strong, smart Scotty Barnes game. So I love that. And something that you've talked about, Steve, I'll echo your points real quick. Having Brandon Ingram in the half court as someone that can just save some of your possessions, or you can just flow second side to, that seems important. Just as simple as, let's go Chicago action, pin down into a handoff. Oh, the middle of the floor is just here. Brandon Ingram will just take the shot and continue taking the shot and making the shot unless you send some bodies his way. And so him being able to do that obviously helps grease the wheels of your half-court offense. But because he's so good at it, there isn't as much pressure for RJ Barrett to be good at it. It isn't as much pressure for Scotty Barnes to be good in that area. It isn't as much pressure for Emmanuel Quickley to be good in that area because Brandon Ingram got you, big dog. So, like, I appreciated that part. Some of the Mamu drives were really interesting to me. But fun game between the Raptors and the Hawks. The Hawks have to tighten the screws defensively, but I trust it won't be that for the entire season. So that was an interesting one for me. Miami-Orlando, because we always have to start a season with a Heat Magic game, apparently. I was intrigued. I was annoyed. I was intrigued again. Then I was annoyed a little bit more, and then I was intrigued. On the Orlando side, Desmond Bane, hello. We talked about this during preseason. We talked about it during division preview, so I won't hang here too long, but his pick and roll play, I like the way that Orlando set up some of these pick and rolls. We're going to start you in the corner. Here's an off-ball screen to get you a catch. Whoever's screening for you is going to receive a screen first, and then we're flowing into a pick and roll. We got the defense. We got you moving. Your defender's trying to catch up. We got the screener defender's guy moving. He's got to catch up, and now we're flowing into a two-man game that you can't just easily switch, and you're out of position to do so even if you want to. And so just something as simple as that felt like a staple of the half-court offense for Orlando, so that was cool. Using Desmond Bane as a screener just generated good stuff, even if the shots didn't go down. Like, the actual, like, you know, the actual efficiency numbers on that wasn't as high as I thought when watching, but process-wise, really enjoyed that. I think that's really going to put teams in peril, especially worse defensive teams. That's going to be a good bit. For Miami...
Well, real quick, sticking on Orlando, I think one of the bigger things is, one, having Jalen Suggs back sure helps a lot as far as being able to have more flow and go side to side. But being able to involve them all together is key in the different actions that you can, even if it's like a double drag or you just flow into it. I think they had a really fun one where Desmond Bane was just setting a down screen for Paolo with an empty side that they went to in the second half, and that flowed in the pick and roll. So I think being able to use Bane for Franz and Paolo is key. Being able to use them together and develop that is key. So you can kind of get some of that synergy to kind of throw teams off balance, because Paolo and Franz have size. And so how often are you going to have enough size on all three to make those actions a comfortable switch at all times? And so that can give them now some more anchor points in the half court when they do want to play a little bit slower. But I like the spacing. I like the pacing. I mean, who knew that Orlando and Miami would produce an offensive banger to that degree? Because let me tell you, I did not have that on my bingo card, Nikias Duncan. I did not think I was going to look up on the second night of the season and see that they combined to score 77 points in the first quarter, and they made a combined 12 threes. That's not the Heat Magic game I know.
It sure isn't. My trauma is just a whole bunch of Evan Fournier and Nikola Vucevic, and wait, the Heat are up 10. Oh, no, 37 seconds left. The Heat are down 8, and we don't have to get there. We don't have time to relive my trauma. But either way, fun basketball game. I will say quickly on the Miami front, really good Davion Mitchell game. The rim pressure is important. The floaters are important. The on-ball defense is good. Steve, as you have consistently pointed out, he gets kind of floaty off the ball. Has to continue to tighten that up, but he just brings a level of oomph that the Heat need. Kind of annoyed by the Bam Adebayo experience. And I say that within the context of the offense, because they continue to push the ball up early, which I like. But like his involvement of the offense kind of bothered me in this one. It was something that kind of perked up during the preseason, but it's just like, okay, it's preseason. We're only seeing these guys for like 12 minutes anyway. They have to find a better balance of the Bam touches, because it felt like we're going five out, Bam is in the corner, that is just kind of it. And then it was like an assistant got the phone, like, hey, Bam hasn't touched the ball in a minute. Here are four straight mid-post possessions. And I'm just like, I want him to touch the ball. I want him to touch the ball within the flow of all of this. I don't want him to just be catch and shoot guy on the perimeter. I don't want him to just be elbow hub. Let's mix in some of the stuff together. And again, this is game one of the regular season. So like not pressing the button, but just as a general observation from that game, I didn't like the offensive balance. And you're going to need a better offensive balance from Bam for this to all work together. So I'll sprinkle that in. Circling back to kind of the full court pressure, just transition bit. Charlotte, Brooklyn. I was very excited to watch the Brooklyn Nets play basketball this year. To peel the curtain back.
I'll peel the curtain back. Don't worry about it. So Nekias Duncan wanted to watch the Brooklyn Nets and the Charlotte Hornets so badly. And Nekias Duncan also said that the Brooklyn Nets will have a top 10 defense throughout whatever games he said. I don't remember. And I reminded him of the fact that Michael Porter Jr. and Cam Thomas are gainfully employed and start for this team. And they gave up 100, and how many points did they give up to the Charlotte Hornets?
Too many.
Okay. Continue.
Okay. So, yeah, to Steve's point, because I made this, I had this take slash this comparison, and I was like, this Nets team, based on what they did last year, what Jordy's going to try to establish this year, it gave me seeds of, I think it was either the 2021 Thunder or the 21-22 Thunder, where they were not a good team. They did not win a bunch of games, but through like the first 2.5 months of the season, the Thunder were quietly a top 10 defense. And I was like, I have these kind of vibes about this Nets team. I think they're going to be a very annoying defense to deal with. And even with the MPJ portion of it all, I look at who OKC was playing that year when they had the top 10 defense. They didn't have A-plus guys across the board. It's like, okay, if there's buy-in, there's going to be more size for MPJ. I would imagine he's going to be motivated in a new spot, et cetera. Like, I think they can do this before losing a whole bunch of games. I watched the whole game, but I watched that first quarter, Steve. There are so many possessions. MPJ is the low man, and he has tagging responsibilities. It'd be one thing if he was just late, Steve. It'd be one thing if he was late. He's getting caught, like, he's running to the roll, and then it's a skip to the corner. He's got to close out, open shot. But it'd be one thing if it was that. The brother didn't move on multiple possessions, Steve. And I'm just like, what are we doing right now? What are we doing right now? Like, part of my intrigue for this matchup, and we talked about this on the warm-up, shout out to the warm-up, I was like, hey, this is going to be pesky, full-court pressure Brooklyn defense. It's going to be zippy Charlotte offense. Like, it's a fun clash of styles between two young teams. And I wish I would have gotten the pesky defense from Brooklyn. Like, similar to Toronto-Atlanta bit, oh, y'all want to go full-court pressure? Here's a quick hit ahead. We have broken this in 3 seconds. And it's like, well, so much for that. And then you get into the half-court elements where you got to be physical off the ball. You got to be active helpers if you need to. You need to be into your spots early. MPJ didn't do any of that. And, like, he was not the only culprit. Like, I think to the ball pressure point, like, it was kind of a disappointing Zaire Williams game, and I'm generally high on what he does defensively. But, like, bro, it can't be that. I don't expect it to be that moving forward. But yeah, game one, it was just bad. Like, we were joking in the watch party. It's like, hey, Nekias, go ahead and one of our members, like, hey, go ahead and just kill that prediction. Like, it's fine. I was like, no, it's game one, but like, this was bad. And I want to say that this was bad. Charlotte, though, electrifying your transition. zooming all the way out, we got Ryan Kalkbrenner starting. He is just in the deepest drop you have ever seen in your life. And that did invite some fun Nick Claxton drives early in that game. But deep drop for Ryan Kalkbrenner. And then here comes Musa Diabate. All of the activity. All of the hands. Had a coast-to-coast sequence that he had no business putting together, but he did. This is going to be a fun Charlotte group, I think. But I was disappointed in the Brooklyn showing early on.
Yeah, I'll give you that ISO on Brooklyn, Charlotte. And I'm glad I did. And I hope they don't play again this year, right? Somehow, please.
No, there will be multiple, but fun fact, you know who Brooklyn's next opponent is?
Who?
I believe it's the San Antonio Spurs.
All right.
So I will be locked in. Hopefully they are locked in. because that could get funny. But last thing I had while we're on defense. So the Los Angeles Lakers, we know they don't have great defensive personnel up and down the roster. And LeBron James is out. And it's kind of tough to rely on someone like LeBron at his stage of his career to like help anchor your defense anyway. But I think more than anything, one, they were right back to being super switch heavy, like we saw last year. I think last year they led the NBA switch rate about 39%. It was up above 42 in this opening game, so we'll see where that lands. But more than anything, like I just want to be able to feel the Laker defense in some area. And it's like, okay, you're not a full court pressure team. You're not like a top lock team off the ball, and you're getting that kind of physicality that way. You're switching everything, or darn near everything, it feels like. And it's just like, at what stage of your defense is the offense feeling you? And again, this is one game take, so hopefully that ramps up. But it was one of the things that kind of stood out to me in that Warriors game, where they were just, they had their half court movement and off ball screening and stuff, but they were also just poking at matchups and getting those matchups easier than I would have anticipated. And I'm just like, okay, I don't expect this to be a top 10 defense, but like there is just a level of physicality that I would like to see, even if you are still going to be a switch team. I want to see that improve because I just did not like what I saw in that opener.
Now let's talk about it, because apparently what I talked about it on the season preview, you didn't take into consideration that if they don't have a base, they're not going to look good defensively. I gave you a spoiler for that game. I think for me, it's one of these things where they have to give the effort, and the effort level wasn't there from the start. Can't be bad in transition. You can't struggle to keep the ball in front, and then you can't be late on rotations. And now if you're in a scenario where pick and roll wise, you don't feel comfortable guarding certain people a certain way. Like I think they started out first pick and roll, DeAndre Ayton was above the 3-point line, but okay, we don't want to have two on the ball. You try and rotate over, your rotation's late, you get up open shots. They have to have more zip. So I think, you know, ball pressure is fantastic, but the thing you don't want to do, you know, if you're not an overactive team, you don't have to be an overactive team. Be physical, disrupt cuts. And the problem is if you're going to play off, and you're going to give space, you got to be able to keep the ball in front and not get hit first. And so they've got to just have a better mindset defensively and give better effort on that end of the floor. They can't let offense bleed into their defense. And I think it's one of those things where it's the start of the season. Last year, they kind of knew. They went through some of the struggles and understood, okay, if we play defense at this type of level, we're not going to be good. They flipped it. They're going to have to learn that lesson again, apparently.
So, yeah, those are just some early thoughts for me. Mentioned earlier, like, I can't wait to tap into Bucks Wizards to see what happened there. I tried desperately to find a way to watch Clippers Jazz because they got the Clippers out of here. I want to see how they've done it. So I want to tap in with that for sure. Ended up being a close-ish game. The Bulls just jumped on the Pistons, apparently. So I'm excited to see, like, how that happened before tonight's slate starts. But there's been some fun hoops so far, Steve. I already had, again, multiple 40-point games. We've had a lot of overtime games. We've had some late-game stuff already. Like, the season is underway, and I've had a lot of fun with it. But we got a fun weekend ahead. These slates are heavy. These matchups are interesting. And we are going to have a lot of fun. All right, Steve, let's close with a little bit of news. Well, one, literally coming through the pipeline, DeAndre Jordan, you are a New Orleans Pelican, apparently. So that is interesting. How about that? Some more center depth. Coming in to the New Orleans Pelicans. Did not have that on the bingo card. Yeah. When I say literally now, the notification on my phone doesn't even have like 2 minutes ago. It literally says now. So we love a live news break because Lord knows that would have bothered me if we hit in and I saw that. So shout out to DeAndre Jordan, still trucking along. Did you have DeAndre Jordan thoughts, Steve?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Okay. Well, shout out DJ. On the W side, Steve, we have three hirings coming. Maybe not made official yet, but it seems to be trending that way. The Toronto Tempo, their first head coach will be Sandy Brondello. The Dallas Wings set to hire Jose Hernandez. The, I guess, now former head coach of the University of South Florida on the women's side, has been there since 2000. The Portland Fire, hiring current Cavs assistant Alex Arama as their new head coach. Among the three, Steve, which one raises your brow the most? What intrigues you about these hires?
I like Sandy to Toronto. Let's do that's credibility right off the rip. Sandy Mardello is an excellent coach and is changed every place that she's been on an upward trajectory. So let's get off to a great start and let's build a culture that way. So that's a home run to me. I am intrigued by Fernandez in Dallas because of the combination of experience and international connections. And also Carl Smesko just kind of did this. So what's this look like to a degree? Mm-hmm. The Fire one intrigues me. So we're going to see how that system gets implemented. Mm-hmm. I'm old school.
I'm old school. Fair enough. I think for me, the broader question that I have as it pertains to the tempo and the Fire in particular is how these hires are going to influence their plans heading into the expansion drafts whenever we have them, because I don't know where these CBA negotiations are right now. And thus, since we're having the double expansion draft, I don't know how many players are going to be protected. And in light of just about everyone being a free agent, I don't know how that's going to work either. But that's a rant for another day. I do wonder, does the hire of Sandy Brondello to the Temple kind of signal we're more willing to take on vets? We want to win now. We want to implement the system now. With Alex Arama in Portland, does that signal, especially with the, you know, constraints led learning and just the different development style and just the emphasis on player development in general, are we going to trend younger with our picks and with our future free agent signings, et cetera? So like, that's kind of where my mind goes. Like, what does this signal about these expansion drafts?
Can I raise my hand?
Sure.
Bud, everyone's a free agent.
That's true.
We just gonna take what we can get, big dog. What you?
I mean, yes, but you can still try to prioritize a player type or an age group, etc. Within that,
yeah, the good ones.
Yes, but okay, you know what I mean. Don't do this to me. But I am curious about that portion. And with the Wings, like learning Fernandez was apparently a finalist for the job last year before they landed on Chris Kokkonen, and so there's obviously a level of trust already in the building. And level of appreciation that they have in the building. We're looking at 25 years of head coaching experience on the college level. And you already mentioned the international connection. So what I imagine that's going to play a major role in how the Wings want to handle free agency in particular and how they want to try to build this out around Paige Bueckers. I think I kind of wonder about the Arike of it all. And like, if that signals anything about how much the Wings are going to prioritize bringing her back and to have her as a partner alongside Paige Bueckers as they build this thing out, because this is just about to be Paige's. But that part intrigues me. Other than that, like, just general congratulations. What's up?
Everybody a free agent. I got free will. What you mean?
Yes. You know what? Thank you for listening to or watching this episode of the Dunker Spot Podcast. You can catch us on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. We also have our own little subsection within that if you want to check out all the Dunker Spot episodes. You can catch me on socials at NikaiasNBA, Steve on socials at SteveJones20. We'll catch you next week. We'll have opening weekend takeaways. We'll dig a little deeper as the sample grows. We're going to have some fun. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the hoop.